toppled a month ago, Sudan's prime minister is reinstated after an agreement with the military. Now a new technocrat government is expected to take office. But as angry protests continue, will this agreement hold? And how much power will the military have? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Rob Matheson. Now, it's a deal that's being met with optimism and uncertainty. Sudan's Prime Minister, Abdalla Hamdok, is promising a path to democracy after being reinstated under an agreement with the military. He was ousted nearly a month ago when the army chief seized power and dissolved his cabinet. Weeks of protests followed. At least 41 people died during confrontations with police. Several political factions have rejected the deal. They say they won't recognise any agreement with the armed forces. We're going to get to our guests shortly, but first, Hiba Morgan reports.
A breakthrough in Sudan's political crisis. Nearly a month after a military takeover and the dissolution of the transitional government, on Sunday, military leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and deposed Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok signed an agreement that paved the way for Hamdok to be reinstated.
When I signed this political agreement, I was guided by a number of key principles. Chiefly among them is to avoid further bloodshed. Our people are prepared to sacrifice more, but every drop of blood is precious.
The agreement comes after weeks of negotiations between the two sides, mediated by Sudanese political figures. It calls for the release of political prisoners, including senior officials, who were arrested on October 25th, the day of the takeover, and in the days that followed. The agreement also lays out a plan to expand political participation in the transitional government. General Burhan, who cited political divisions as the reason for his taking power, says the deal will lead to dialogue to end those divisions.
We've been living in crisis for a long time, and by signing this declaration, we were able to establish a real foundation for a transitional period as envisioned.
Sudan has been governed by a power-sharing agreement between the military and the political coalition, known as the Forces of Freedom and Change, since August 2019. But the months leading to the recent military takeover saw tensions between the two sides. Both accused each other of slow economic recovery and lack of judicial reforms.
The agreement signed between Hamdok and General Burhan may have reinstated Hamdok as prime minister, but it doesn't mean the end of Sudan's political crisis. Since the takeover nearly a month ago, there have been protests nearly every day, with people demanding an entirely civilian government and an end to the partnership between the military and civilians. Sunday's deal means the military remains as a governing partner, and that has angered many here.
Thousands protested near the presidential palace in Khartoum before the signing of the deal. Authorities responded by firing tear gas and live ammunition in the air. At least 40 protesters have been killed since the military took over, and more than 200 injured. The Forces of Freedom and Change, which nominated Hamdok as prime minister back in 2019, has distanced itself from the deal. And analysts say there are questions about how much the military can be trusted.
The last month has been a total fiasco for the military. Why? Because they did what they did, and suddenly they had to do 180 degrees return. That doesn't mean that the prime minister is suddenly the ruler of the land, but what it means is that there is a momentum suddenly not in favor of the generals, but rather in the favor of the street. But as you said, we will see where will this take us, because there are a number of dynamics at play here. There's the military, there's the street, there is the neighbors and the African Union, and there's the international community.
For now, Sudan takes another uncertain step in its transition. Hiba Morgan, Al Jazeera, Khartoum.
Well, speaking exclusively to Al Jazeera, Abdullah Hamdok explained what he hopes the new government would eventually look like.
The core concept of the upcoming government is that it will be a technocratic government made up of Sudanese qualified professionals. About 1.5 years are left out of the transitional period. Therefore, the upcoming government, according to me, should focus on very specific issues, chiefly the completion of transition into democracy and its related obligations, like the convening of the constitutional conference and holding the elections. You all know that the elections will require 1 full year at least. It may drag on for 1.5 years. I hope we can all agree on an independent government of technocrats during the remaining time of the transitional period, where this government would lead the country until the scheduled elections.
Okay, let's bring in our guests. In Khartoum, we have Khalid Khair. She's managing partner at Insight Strategy Partners. In Dubai, Ahmed Al-Ghayili, who's a Sudanese lawyer and a legal commentator. And in Doha, we have Walid Madibou, the founder and president of the Sudan Policy Forum. Thank you very much indeed for being with us. Khalid, I'm going to come to you first. This is going to be a technocrat government, ostensibly with no political affiliations. Political prisoners have been released and investigations apparently will be held into the killing of protesters. Is that going to go some way to satisfy the opponents of this agreement?
It doesn't look like it. The initial response was very vehement and very immediate. And we haven't really seen much deviation from that, from political bodies and the civilian bloc. So neither the resistance committees that make up the bulk of the street-level movement, or the Sudan Professional Association, or indeed the Forces of Freedom and Change political umbrella that used to sort of protect the prime minister and in many ways help him make political decisions. The fact that the FFC had been pretty much written out of this agreement, as per, of course, the wishes of the putschists on the 25th of October, raises some questions about to what extent the prime minister will have any support from a civilian going forward.
Walid, the original transitional process had effectively ground to a halt. At least that's what it looked like from the outside. Doesn't this agreement at least create some sort of room for manoeuvre to move forward?
I believe the dissolution of the transitional government threatened to derail the process made in the Sudanese transition thus far and has plunged the country back into the cycle of violence. I believe that if you look at the fact that no deal has been reached with the SLM or the SPLM led by Abdul Wahid Muhammad Noor and Al Hilo, and if we entertain the idea that the coup d'etat imperiled essential debt relief and international aid, and it's now endangering Sudan's international standing as a nascent democracy. I don't believe that this whole issue of technocratic government is going to resolve the situation, because the quagmire is of a political nature rather than of a technocratic nature.
Ahmed, at the signing, it was suggested that this was a return to a prior constitutional agreement. Can you just clarify if that's the case?
Far from it. I think any interpretation of what was signed yesterday will tell you this is a mere institutionalization of the coup that took place on the 25th of October. The only decision that was reversed from the long list of the decisions taken on 25th of October was the reinstatement of the prime minister. However, we're still fully and squarely within what I would call the extra constitutional order that was created that morning. The generals still call all the shots. They have illegally sacked the cabinet, sacked the sovereignty council, replaced it with individuals that are to their liking. They have reappointed the prime minister, who has been under captivity for 3 weeks, and they have imprisoned hundreds of politicians and activists. So any suggestion that this is a return to the 24th of October is defies reality. This is a continuation of the coup and a full capitulation by the prime minister by joining the coup plot.
Khalid, I'm making the point there that this agreement is being accused of being an effort to essentially whitewash the military takeover. That is what the intention is, it doesn't seem to be very effective, does it?
Well, no, exactly. But I mean, the coup plotters have miscalculated the response on the streets several times. So this is by no means a surprise right now. I think what will be telling is to what extent they will continue to miscalculate how unpopular this move is, and indeed how unpopular the military is with many people on the street. And you know, they've been calling for full civilian government, not just a return of Hamdok. That's something that satisfies overwhelmingly the international community, not the Sudanese street. And so in order to get some kind of domestic legitimacy, Burhan, Hemeti, and everyone around them will need to really start thinking about ways in which to include the street, make this much more meaningful. And of course, it's not really possible for them in many ways to do so. So they're going to have to think of another way rather than this agreement, which has received very little traction with the Sudanese street, to get Sudan out of this political crisis.
Mm. Well, Eid, you mentioned before that one of the significant problems that the Sudan was facing were of a political nature. Now, if this is a government of technocrats, if that is essentially an attempt to remove politics from the process, and, or shall we say, remove politics as a distraction from the process, isn't that actually a legitimate way of moving the country forward?
See, if we go back and try to look through the process, Burhan said that he thought it a coup plot attributed to mutinous military factions and Bashir loyalists. So it's obviously he was under pressure from factions in the army and his deputy to take action. But the partnership has become increasingly strained by demands for military to be brought under civilian control. And now with this new arrangement, it's very obvious that the civilians have been brought under military control rather than the reverse. So I don't think that this whole issue of a technocratic government is going to resolve the situation, because if you look at the previous government, 70% of them, and I know them personally, were to be considered technocrats. The military had some disagreements with some political figures, but I don't think that a coup d'etat is the way to have resolved the situation. Killing of 40 youths, injuring about 300, and imprisoning at least 600 individuals. I think that we are going back to the days of al-Bashir, and unless and until we see what kind of a deal Hamdok could have reached. To me, it's not very clear that he has reached for some sort of a deal that would bring the military under the civilian rule. It's only the reverse that is very clear to me.
Mm. Ahmed, in previous years, we've seen a lot of pressure, a lot of statements being made by foreign governments, foreign diplomats about the situation in Sudan. It all seems to have gone very quiet on that front since the military takeover. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think you can't address the international community in the aggregate. I think there have been pretty vocal voices in the West, especially in the U.S., speaking out pretty loudly against the coup. And I think one of the triggers for this agreement was the introduction of potential sanctions against the coup plotters. I think that increased the pressure significantly on the military leaders. Unfortunately, that pressure was not utilized to garner a better deal for the people of Sudan. But the Sudan sits in a tough neighborhood. I appreciate that, and I appreciate that not everyone in our immediate neighborhood wants a beacon of democracy at their doorsteps. Having said that, it is in the interest of every single neighbor of Sudan to see Sudan stable and Sudan prospering, and that will not happen without heeding the calls of millions of Sudanese on the streets who are not going home until they get what they want, and that's freedom from military rule.
Khulod, back in 2019, the African Union gave the council that existed then 60 days to hand over power to civilians. Then it suspended Sudan's membership. Again, why aren't we hearing more from the African Union in this? Because given what Amr was saying, it is in everybody's interest in the region to make sure that stability in Sudan is maintained.
Well, the African Union has had to deal with a lot of coups of late, particularly in sort of the Sahelian and West African region. The African Union as an institution is usually quite slow to respond to these things, and there are some internal fractures within it. What we saw very quickly after the coup was that the Peace and Security Council of the African Union made moves to suspend Sudan, of course, but this was sort of rejected by Egypt and Algeria, but the motion passed. What we've seen since yesterday's agreement is we've had the Congolese prime minister is in town and he met with Wuhan. Congo, of course, is heading the African Union at the moment. And so there are moves to bring Sudan back into the African Union fold and to restart, in many ways, a lot of the funding, which in many ways was the sort of main objective behind the seeming rapprochement between the coup plotters and the prime minister. This is quite a cynical move, I think, because it's not just simply a case of, you know, bringing Hamburg into the government and sort of opening the money taps. It's much more about whether this really will need stability. And it looks like right now that's not the case.
Waleed, as we mentioned at the start of the programme, there are several political factions who have said they're not going to support anything to do with this agreement. Is there any way that this agreement can actually function if that support is not given?
I think that's the essential question now in this process. Obviously, I think the strikes and the civil disobedience to a great extent have been very successful, but it has brought the whole economy and the whole economic activity to a halt. Nonetheless, it remains unclear whether it could influence change in the absence of any political brokerage. See, what's one good thing about Hamdok is that he has adopted a policy of containment rather than denouncement. But it's not clear that he has succeeded in brokering a deal that would satisfy the young youth revolting in the street, nor do I think that he has given enough time to consult his social and political base. So if the young youth in the street are saying that we don't want any dialogue with the military junta, and the military junta refuses to accept some political figures, then obviously and definitely we do have some sort of a political stalemate. And we need the interference of the African Union. We need the IGAD, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, to get involved to help the Sudanese people who is brokering a deal that is principled, that is moral, and that is satisfying to the needs and the spirit of the Sudanese people.
Mm. Ahmed, if the military does continue to hold control in Sudan, of course, long term, it's going to be responsible for all the problems that Sudan is facing with the economy, with food shortages and so on. Do you think that the military is actually prepared to deal with situations like that?
Absolutely not. And I think just to add to what Waleed was saying, I think the fundamental choice that Sudan is facing is not about a technocratic government or who should be the prime minister. It is what is the role of the military in public life? And when we review what is the menu of available options, there's one option that we have tried for the last 2 years, in fact, for the last 30 years, and that hasn't worked, which is rule by the military. So the millions on the streets have spoken, and their word is clear that they don't want anything or any role for these individuals in the future of Sudan. And that makes Sudan ungovernable for them, politically, economically, et cetera. These guys are not experts or technocrats themselves, so they are unable to deliver on the prosperity that Sudan wants. But more importantly, they have a lot of blood on their hands, not just from the last 3 weeks, but from the Khartoum sit-in massacre, from their involvement in some of the Darfur atrocities. So clearly, these are not the suitable people to lead Sudan into a democratic transition. And that's why people are not accepting this deal and will not accept this deal. The standoff will continue with only one possible outcome, which is their exit from political life. Mm.
Khalid, it does look as though this arrangement between the military and the prime minister is here for the duration. It's not going to change anytime soon unless something, of course, significant happens. Would it be a responsible response by the protesters, by the opponents of this agreement, to at least give it some time to see if it can start delivering on anything that might then give some sort of indication that things could move forward?
I mean, you know, one has to appreciate the level of sort of high emotion in the streets right now and the level of perceived betrayal. You know, first by the military after they deposed Bashir, then by the Sudan Revolutionary Forces, the former rebels, when they sided with the coup plotters and joined Sovereign Council quite recently, and then yesterday by the Prime Minister himself. And I think that's going to take some time for people to work through. There is a real sense of dejection and not at all any hope that this will work. But beyond that, you know, it's very difficult to think how an agreement that was overwhelmingly brokered by one side, particularly at the expense of the other, that sort of sequestered the prime minister and isolated him from speaking to his constituents and to his support system, would then bring about the kind of things that the prime minister was, and indeed the street, was trying to implement. It seems like there's an inherent contradiction in the way this agreement was brokered and in the way that, and what it's trying to implement. And so I think that goes beyond emotion. It goes beyond sort of the technicalities of the agreement itself and more about the ways in which decision-making is happening in Sudan. As your previous speaker said, it's much more of the same rather than turning over a new leaf. Mm.
Waleed, we heard in the speeches that were made at the signing of the agreement that there seemed to be a lack of acknowledgement on the part of Abdullah Hamdok of the actions of the military. And one would imagine that it is important for the military, led by General Burhan, to get some sort of legitimacy, if you like, on the military takeover itself. The two men seem to be working reasonably well together at the moment, but do you think that that lack of acknowledgement, that lack of agreement, if you like, with what the military did, might actually cause problems and cause this to split further down the line?
It won't even take much time. I think within a period of one month, this is going to collapse. See, it's not about Al-Burhan taking over power. We are seeing that he is boosting the presence of the Islamist groups back in power. And one of your respected guests was speaking about the fact that it's Sudan is in the middle of a region ruled by autocrats, but obviously these autocrats, they don't like to see the Islamists back in power. So I think Burhan now, in a period of 1 month, he has reinstated the Islamist cadre, at least the mid-level bureaucrats, back into place. And that is where there is going to be a disagreement between him and Burhan, between Hamdok and the revolutionary youth. It's just going to be a fight that resists the idea of going back to the days of the Islamist, centrist, and racist state. The Sudanese people have revolted to be able to decentralize, to de, uh, de decentralize the government, but more important, they wanted to get rid of the Islamist centrist state. Now, what the Sudanese
Walid Madabo, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid time has caught up with us, and I apologize for cutting you off like that. But I do want to say thank you to all our guests, Khalid Khair, Amir Al-Ghalili, and Walid Madabo. Thank you very much indeed for being with us. You can see the program again, of course, anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Rob Matheson, and the whole team here, bye for now.